The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's in with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. How the devil are you? Hey. It's 2022 and we are back with brand new episodes of the Two Shot Podcast. It's all very exciting. How are you? How's January treating you? Hey, how did Christmas treat you? Did you have a nice time? Did you rest? Were you stuck in the kitchen? Did you see your loved ones? Did you stay safe? Was it a sad time? Was it a happy time? That's a lot of questions, isn't it? Look, don't worry, I'm sure you're sick of answering all those questions when you've been reuniting with your work colleagues and your friends, but look, I hope everything was calm, and I hope January is giving you a lovely warm cuddle in these cold, cold days. But we are back for lovely warm episodes each and every Thursday. Now, look, just come here. So over the next coming weeks, you are going to see and hear certain changes to the podcast. Now, look, it is going to still be the same Two Shot Podcast that you know and love and that you've supported since 2017. Can you believe we've been doing this since 2017? Bonkers. So look, one of the first changes that I'm going to tell you about that you're going to see over the next few weeks is when you are scrolling back and you're searching for episodes that you might have missed, you'll go, wait a minute, I never knew the Two Shot Podcast was split into seasons. Yeah. That's one of the first things we're doing. We have gone back through the archives since 2017 and we have split into seasons. I didn't know what I was saying then. I've split it into seasons. So each season consists of roughly around 20 episodes. It is going to be manageable for you to scroll back, look at who you've missed, jump to season two, go to season three, go back and revisit episodes should you want and need to. Also, for us, it sets manageable goals. So we're kicking off with our first season. It's going to consist, again, of 20 episodes. So when I introduce this week's guest, which is Gary Usher, and I say, this is Gary Usher, season 9, episode 8 of the Two Shot Podcast, you're not going to go, Craig, what are you talking about? Because that's what we are. We're into season 9, and this is episode 8 with a part 2 of Gary Usher, but more of that in a second. What else are you going to expect? Well, look, there's a fair few things that I can't tell you right now, okay? You just have to trust me and keep an eye and an ear out, and I will let you know when it's ready, okay? One of the questions I can answer, a lot of people have been asking about live shows. Now, it's something that myself and producer Griff have spoken about. It's something that we really want to do this year. Our aim is to get out there, see you all, and do some live shows and meet some great people, have some great guests. When are we going to do that? We're going to do that when it's a little bit safer, okay? You with me on that? Let's do it when we can all be in the same room and we can be comfortable and people aren't worried. Okay, let's do that. But I assure you, It's in the post. What else is coming up this year? Well, as I say, a lot of exciting things. It's still going to be the same two-shot podcast, just bigger, brighter, and a little bit shinier. So that's where we are in 2022. Let's go back 2 years ago when some would say, foolishly, cooked for Gary Usher, the award-winning chef here in the Northwest. And if you haven't listened to that episode, I do urge you to stop what you're doing and listen to that before you dive into this and get some backstory. It's not about me cooking for Gary and him liking it, although that was the highlight of my not only podcast career, just career full stop, really. But it's a great episode. It's a lot of people's favourites. You really get to grips with who Gary is. He doesn't pull any punches. Certain people... yeah, we were worried that we were going to get some sort of injunctions against us after that episode, but he's cracker and it's a great episode. So with, you know, the past 18 months that the hospitality industry has had, we wanted to go straight to the horse's mouth and see how it was for our friend Gary Usher. So he said, why don't you come down to Carla on King Street in Manchester, which is one of his restaurants. It was closed that day, but the chefs were, they were prepping and they were testing. So he said, come down and we'll set up some mics. And then we got down to it, as you're going to hear now. And we had a fantastic time with him. It was great to see him again and for everybody bouncing back. And then his lovely chefs cooked us all a nice bit of dinner. We didn't record that, don't worry. Suffice to say, it was delicious. And this is a delicious episode with the mighty Gary Usher. This is season 9, episode 8 of the Two Shot Podcast with the incredible Mr. Gary Usher. I'll see you at the end.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Now, I'm not hot on dates. I haven't got my diary in front of me, but I think it's around this time 2 years ago when you snuck into my, you didn't sneak into my hotel room. I invited you in and we had our first conversation. That's like 2 years, Gary.
2 years ago. And, you know, I feel like it's been a whole lifetime of events since.
Yeah.
The ups and the downs in that 2 years is... monumental.
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, I don't, listeners know that I tend not to focus on any sort of speak of the pandemic and the apocalypse and all that, but I think we do really need to get into how it's affected you, and because you know, a lot of people have found it tough with one restaurant, but you're juggling six.
Yeah, it would be almost impossible to have a chat about the last
and not mention it.
Yeah,
yeah,
about the last 2 years, because that's been my life for the last 2 years. So the restaurants and the pandemic has been everything. It's been completely all consuming. There's been nothing else that I could think about or be involved in other than how the pandemic has affected every single day of my life and every single day in the business. So. Yeah, it would be really difficult not to talk about it. I mean, it doesn't have to all be...
No.
It's everything that's happened isn't negative. There's been huge ups as well as the massive downs. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, there's no kind of sob story with it, and there's no, you know, it doesn't have to be deep, dark, and depressing. I mean, there has been times like that.
We'll get there at some point, I'm sure.
It doesn't have to be all about that, because actually, some of the stuff that's happened because of the pandemic has been a blessing in disguise. It's actually, some of the stuff has made the business stronger, so there is ups too.
Well, that is positive, but let's start with negatives. It's always, you know, in everybody's life and business, it's all about problem solving. And I'm thinking, you know, considering what I do when I'm not interviewing people, you're constantly solving problems on set because certain things haven't panned out the way that you wanted it to. But I don't know what could have prepared you for what happened with everything being shut down.
Nothing. Nothing. When we spoke last time, I don't think I've ever been as honest with anybody as I was with you. So I'd like to continue in the same vein, if that's okay, and just be completely honest about
Absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, please do.
The first thing I did when all the restaurants closed was I just gave up. So the first thing I did was I just gave in and I just said that I don't want to do it anymore. And I made a few calls, and after speaking to my accountant and my solicitor about the situation that I was in, I just gave up, and I wanted the business to close. And I don't think I would have been self-destructive about it, but I was really hoping that that would be just what happened, and that I could just get it away from me and not have the responsibility of, you know, the 150 people in the business and yeah. And the feeling that everything's going to close anyway. I just wanted to get rid of it, so I did give up. There's no point me telling you that. You know, we've got through this so far because of some, fighting spirit that I've got, because I didn't have any. So, yeah, I wanted the business to close down.
Would you say that was, you were at your lowest ebb
there? Yeah, that was the lowest, yeah. So that was probably April 2020. So yeah. All the restaurants closed down. Well, they were forced to close. So all the restaurants closed down, and we started making phone calls, and Claire, the MD who runs the business, was, you know, making as many calls and trying to solve as many financial issues as possible. So everything from trying to stop any financial commitments that we have, you know, any regular payments that we have, speaking to, well, the landlord's part was my part, trying to speak to the landlords and get them to help us with the rent, to stop paying rent if we could, or to have a time out on it.
How did that work out?
Shit. Yeah. You know what, Craig? We're sat in Carla right now in Manchester, yeah. And this is the restaurant that I worried about the most because it's the highest rent within the group. You know, it's
because of its location. We're right on King Street.
King Street, Manchester. It couldn't be any more prime. So this is the highest rent. This was the one I was most worried about. And actually, this was the newest restaurant. This is the restaurant, and these are the landlords that have—they've just stepped in, and they've just been there for us, and they've just said, "Listen, relax, just chill out. Everything that you worry about with us, don't. We're here to help you get through this. Don't worry about rent. Don't worry about. They just helped us. They just,
wow.
Yeah. Look, every landlord is in a different position, so I don't look at other landlords and the ones that didn't or couldn't help in that way. I don't look at them and think, you know, fucking hell, why couldn't they do the same? Because everybody is in a different situation. You
True.
Don't know what, you know, there could be a landlord that only has one property and that's the one that you're renting off them. So it could be their livelihood.
Mm.
I doubt that's the case, but that can happen.
Yeah.
So I don't look at it in that way, but the landlords here have been amazing. So in that respect, it's been amazing. But so we continued with everything that we could to try and stop money going out, basically. But the thing is with a restaurant and the thing is with a business, you don't work day to day in terms of you don't pay for everything at the end of the day and then you start again. You have months and months of payments ahead, so things don't stop, they carry on. So just because you stop selling food and just because money stops going through the till, that doesn't mean money stops going out.
Mm.
So we were in a situation where we were looking at the financials for the next few months, and you know, this is before the government stepped in and spoke about bounce back loans or CBILS or, you know, even, you know, councils helping. This was before any of that. So, yeah, I phoned my solicitor, phoned my accountant, and I said, look, what's going to happen to me, do you think? That sounds really selfish, but I just wanted to know personally where I stood with everything.
Yeah.
And the both of them basically said, you're pretty much fucked. So, that was, sound bad saying that, but that was the reality of it. And that was the truth. That's not me exaggerating. And that's not me putting them in a bad light for giving me doomsday advice.
No, but it is terrifying.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So I was in a really dark place at that moment in March, April 2020. So I pretty much gave up, and I wasn't very much used to anybody that I was working with. So particularly the ops team that run the six restaurants, I wasn't much help to anyone. And at that point, I just wanted it all to end. So that's the lowest point. That's the lowest point.
How and when did you start to begin to sort of pick yourself up and kind of reset?
Yeah. When did we start to pick ourselves up? So we were just looking for things that we could do. And there was a few chefs at that time that had started doing cook at home ideas. So, you know, everything that you do in a restaurant, sending out to people's houses instead.
But I know that you were quite reluctant to do that at first.
But
you didn't want to do it, did you?
No, I didn't want to do it. And also takeaways. I was negative, but I'm also, when we spoke in the last time, I told you about how much I lack in confidence. Mm. That had a massive part of that. I just thought, who the fuck's going to want to order takeaways from us? And who the fuck's going to want to order a feather blade of beef down to Leicester or to London? I just thought it wouldn't fucking work. And I didn't want to do it. I just didn't want to do it.
Because a lot of other restaurants were doing it, weren't they? I think that you were quite late to that party.
We were quite late, yeah. There was a couple of chefs that were doing it. And the takeaways I just thought was shit. And we did actually try takeaways because we'd give it a go and it didn't work anyway. Takeaways absolutely bombed in the restaurants. No one really ordered from us. And then Claire, the MD, said, look, we should do this cook at home thing. And again, I didn't really want to do it. But then we carried on looking into it. And Dan, who is our, who does all our graphics from Natural Selection, said the same thing. And he'd been looking at it and he said, you should do it. It'll fucking work. Let me help you. Let me help you do it. And
he's great, Dan.
He's amazing. Yeah. And we were actually great. We were sat in here because I was sat in here with Dan because we were actually doing a little bit of filming. Sorry, I'm jumping from one thing to another.
No, mate. You know what it's like.
Yeah, we were doing a little bit of filming because when I phoned Dan, this is probably in March or April, because Dan's become a very good friend of mine. He said, what's going to happen? I said, Dan, I think Elite's going to go bust, mate. And he said to me, and only a really good friend could say this, and only someone that really knew me well, he said, do you want to film it? And I said, fucking right I do, yeah. So we actually started going around the empty restaurants and filming us, what I thought was us going to be going bust.
Yeah.
So we were in here that day. And he was saying the same as Claire, let's do this cook at home. He said, I'll do it for free. I'll help with all the design. I'll do everything for free. I've seen other people doing it. We could do it. You definitely smash it. I'll help you with this. Dan actually started ringing the frozen ice, the frozen packs company that we would then put into the boxes. He was amazing. Claire was amazing. So we started it and we started it. We launched it. We launched Cook at Home. And with all these things that we tried, Craig, you know, unbelievably, I just can't get around how it happens, but we were really successful with it.
Yeah, it really took off.
It really took off.
And then you were doing the videos as well, showing the people how to prep, and it was like it was so simple.
Yeah, it was so simple. It was what we do, but at home. And then we took all the pain out of, like, you know, the red wine sauce, for example, that goes with the feather blade of beef. There's no way you'd want to make that at home. It'd take you 2 days and it's fucking painful. So we would take all of that pressure out and then make that simple at home.
I mean, I might have done, because at that time I was looking for really complicated recipes just so I go, right, I've got like 4 hours here in the kitchen. We've ticked that off.
Yeah. Well, actually, funny enough, we had a review from Jay Rayner pretty quickly, who ordered the cook at home, and he said something about how complicated it was to do and how many pans you needed to actually do it. But it took off. It really fucking took off. And I'm not sure where the business would be now if we hadn't have done Cook at Home. I'm not sure whether it would be here. It was a massive, massive revenue stream when we had nothing coming in. But it also, what it did was it brought us back to people, back in the front of people's minds, because then we were just a closed group of restaurants with me moaning on social media. And all of a sudden we were an at-home business that we were getting so much interaction on social media with people that were ordering it, saying that they loved it. And all of a sudden we were back in the forefront of people's minds as a restaurant group. So it saved us.
But also, I take it you were able to get your staff who couldn't be in the kitchens to get them back in the kitchen so they could start prepping and cooking the cook at home stuff.
Yeah, it was an unusual one because it was mostly the team at Burnt Truffle, the restaurant on the Wirral. It was mostly the team there with a few other of the team coming from other restaurants, but it was mostly, we pretty much set up Burnt Truffle as an at-home business.
Right.
And so it's been an interesting one. But something now that we will probably always do.
Because you're carrying on doing it now over Christmas, aren't you?
We are. So we, because of this at-home business, we realised that it was potentially something successful that we could carry on doing, you know, indefinitely. So we looked at, if we're going to do it properly, we need a site.
It's only, I can't think of anybody else, right, who would be juggling six restaurants and going, oh, I don't know if they're going to open or I might be going bust, to go, actually, do you know what we need to do? We need to crowdfund for a massive space and start up another business during this time.
Yeah, it was stupid. It was really, the idea of it was stupid, and there was a massive feeling of, I was really nervous about it, because doing a crowdfunding in the middle of a pandemic when everybody's struggling for money and trying to, you know, get by anyway, I was really nervous about that. But the loyal following that we have, it just, yeah, it worked. But we thought if we're going to do cook at home, we're going to need a unit. And if we're going to get a unit, we might as well get one big enough that we can do events from, and we can have an events unit where we can cook at people's weddings and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So we thought we might as well go all in. So we...
I mean, when do you not go all in, Gary? That's the thing.
Yes. Yeah. So we did a crowdfund, and that was to raise £150,000. We didn't try and do anything crazy with it, you know, try and do a crowdfund in a day. We set a normal target of 30 days to raise 150 grand, and it just took off.
Yeah,
it really took off.
Yeah. I put money into that crowdfunding.
No, you didn't.
I did, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
God,
yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Thank you.
No, you're all right, mate.
It took off, and, you know, right now as we sit here, that events unit is now fully up and running. It's like a fucking massive, huge spaceship kitchen inside
it. It's big, if anybody hasn't seen it. Yeah,
it's huge. It's huge. And actually, right now, when the news is talking about potential further lockdowns and whatever else, we've got this unit and we're pretty much ready to go. We've never been so ready for a lockdown ever. So we're kind of at the opposite end of where we were when we heard about the first lockdown happening. So, yeah, those are the ups.
I mean, it is incredible that you've come out of this with another business. You're ready for any eventualities.
We're definitely more ready than we were, for sure. Mm. That's for sure. Yeah, there's been amazing ups. There's been other things that have happened because of the pandemic and in the pandemic within the business that wouldn't have happened otherwise, that have made us stronger as well.
Like what, Gary?
We have streamlined everything that we do, like pretty much every business in the pandemic would have done the same. But what it's made us do is it's made us a tighter business. We've streamlined the menus, we streamlined the wine. We streamline everything that we do. We wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for the pandemic.
Yeah.
And there's always been a fear of trying to streamline menus within a small independent group, because the last thing you ever want to be seen as is a chain or is some corporate group. But we felt like we really didn't have any choice. We'd limited the menu so much leading up to the final closure of the restaurants that we really had four or five dishes on anyway. So to think about having a streamlined menu within the whole business, being able to go to our suppliers and get better deals because we were ordering a dish that would then be the same in six restaurants, gave us so much more buying power. So everything that we did, all the streamlining, has made the business more profitable. It's made the business more consistent as well. Mm. It's made the business easier to run. So there's been a lot of things that have happened in the pandemic that I look at and I think, fucking hell, actually, thank fuck that we're in this situation now.
Yeah.
Because it's made us so much stronger. And also, it's made me think differently about the business as well. I'm a scatty person. I'm unorganized anyway. And like people see with the crowd funds that I do and how impulsive I am with certain decisions. Before the pandemic, I was extremely scatty. I'm not saying I'm not scatty now. I am. But it's made me much more focused. Much, 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 much more focused. I've had the lows of feeling like I wanted to get rid of the business. And now I'm at the other end of that where I feel like there's nothing that can stop us now.
No.
And I feel like I'm really focused and I'm really channeled into the future and the ambitions and the goals for the business. I feel stronger than I ever have about the business. So I only would have had that if we had have had the terrible lows.
Yeah, of course. Did you manage to keep hold of all the staff during this time?
We did. We did. Every single person has stayed with us in the group. And at no point did we make any decisions where it was self-preservation in terms of save the business and get rid of the teams to save money in the bank. And before the furlough schemes came about, there was a lot of businesses, Craig, that just fucked off all their teams.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. I can't comprehend.
No, but that's something that...
And I'm not interested in finding out why people... I'm not interested in... I don't want to understand it.
No, but we already know from people who know you, and certainly from the last podcast, you're fiercely loyal with your staff. You know, before we started recording, we were talking about your head chef here who's been like with you for like 7 years and he's still only 26.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's
incredible. It's amazing. I don't know why the teams are so loyal with us, and I can't speak for anybody that works within the restaurants, but... But personally, my view on all of that is that, you know, I don't know why you would want to create a business where you don't stand by the people that are working hard. I hate saying for you. I'd really like to say that your teams are working with you.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are working for you in, you know, they do. So if somebody's working for you, Why would you not want to stand by them to the very end of everything while they're in the business? I want to support everyone that I can. So when there was a decision to be made about, you know, if we get rid of most of the team except for management now, we can preserve money in the bank. I'd rather go bust. Every single time, I'd rather go bust. We're looking at the way that the Prime Minister is now and the way that he is throwing, so I'm not going to get political, don't worry.
No, it's
I don't
fine.
Know enough about it anyway, but the way what I do see and the way that he's throwing the people that work for him under the bus, I don't fucking understand it. And since we met, I had a terrible, terrible time over at one of the restaurants that got 1 out of 5 in an environmental health inspection.
Yeah. What happened there?
Craig, it was terrible. We weren't up to scratch. We weren't doing what we needed to do to comply and to be safe. And after an inspection, we got a 1 out of 5. Now, the last thing I would ever do is blame anyone except myself. It's my fault. Anything that happens in the business that goes wrong is my fault. It's always my fault. Mm. And that's my responsibility to take that. And it's the same that goes and that leads into the pandemic and how the teams are treated. You know, your responsibility as a so-called leader is to fucking stand in front of people and to be the person that is at the front of it when the problems are happening. And that's why I'm saying it's like the Prime Minister, the first thing that he does is throw people under the bus.
Yeah.
That is not an inspiring leader.
No.
That is not somebody that anybody wants to continue working with. You ask me, you know, why do I think that people stay with us for 7 years? I would like to think, I don't know, and I'm not speaking for them, but I would like to think it's because they've got their back. It's the same with a TripAdvisor review where someone will say that a member of the team was an idiot or or, you know, they didn't know what was on the menu and they're rubbish and this kind of thing. There's not a chance that I would ever speak to that person, invite them back to the restaurant and give them a freebie. No. I'd be messaging that person and tell them never to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think if you work within a team and there's somebody that's, you know, I fucking sound like I'm bigging my, I'm not, I don't
no,
want to try
no,
and say,
not at all.
But that's my, that's what I would think why, you know, you stick by people and hopefully they stick by you back.
Yeah.
That's been a bad part of the pandemic for me, Craig. That's been one of the downs for me, has been looking at the way that certain people were looked after and that type of thing. That's been a real downer for me, and that's been hard for me to get out of, to be honest. That's really put me
what,
in.
Seeing other people treat it's or, made not, me, or not look after certain
yeah,
people.
Craig, it's made me really reflect in the industry that I'm in. And listen, I'm not some angel here. I've been a fucking bad person in my life as well. And I've been a fucking bad person in business too. I've done some really fucking shitty stuff. And I'm not saying that I haven't or ever pretend that I haven't. I have. But some of the stuff that I've seen through the pandemic has made me really resent the people that are a lot of the people in the industry. It's really fucked me off. And it's really made me... I think about London, for example. A lot of the teams that are employed in London are employed with a massive part of their wage. They're paid by service charge. Service charge is something that's added onto the bill in a restaurant in London. It's in every restaurant in London, and there's been loopholes with that over the last 20 years. And most restaurants, and even people that I look up to and respect massively, that's how their business is run. But in the pandemic, when the furlough scheme came in, the government committed to 80% of the team's wages in restaurants, well, in any businesses.
Yeah.
That 80% didn't include the service charge. So if you were a head chef, and I had friends who were in London, and we're talking about head chefs for Michelin star, you know, very, very, very respected, credible people. If you were a head chef for one of those guys, you got your 80% of your wage from the furlough, but then you had your service charge taken off that as well. So it was 80% after your service charge. And if your service charge accounted for 20 or 30% of your wage, people were getting as little as 40% of their wage. I knew head chefs working for very fucking credible people that if they didn't have a partner that could have supported them that didn't work in hospitality, they'd have been homeless. So when I looked at all of that and when I saw leaders in the industry and certain people, I began to get very fucking jaded about the industry that I'm in. And I do have to repeat this, Craig. I'm no fucking angel. I'm not. But there's certain things and there's certain ways within business and looking after people in this pandemic that haven't been done. And I fucking hate it. And I found it really hard to move on from. And I found it really hard on social media not just to fucking get on there and just... You know, just fucking just.
Yeah, I mean, you're not backwards. We're coming forwards on social media sometimes.
Yeah, well, I have trouble with that in my own mind, and I delete nearly every post that I write anyway. But getting on there and not just fucking taking everyone down has been something I've had to fight with in my own mind because it's not worth it, and what good does it do anyway? But I found that really hard.
Were you quite shocked seeing that with certain peers and people in your industry that were behaving like this? If you're shocked and quite surprised.
Fucking shocked, Craig. Unbelievably shocked. Fucking disgusted. And gutted. Fucking gutted. Gutted
because it's not who I thought you were or what you stood for.
Fucking hell. Yeah. Gutted, Craig. Just fucking gutted. And look, it's the whole thing has been shit. The whole thing's been shit. It's hard for me to sit here and not just like spew it all out and just just let rip. I don't want to do that. But no. I found it really hard. I found it really, really hard. That's been a big low for me. Been a big low.
When you were at your lowest ebb and you were thinking, I just want all this responsibility taken off me, so I let everything go. And you admitted that you were at low, but you wouldn't really have let that happen, I don't think. Because it's not just about the responsibility. It's about other people's livelihoods. And you're such the team player within your business. I don't think you could have sat there and just let it go. And you would have had that on your conscience. You couldn't have sat with that, Gary, I don't think.
I'm not sure, mate. I don't know, because at that, I don't know. I think this, you know, it wasn't about me trying to sell the business or get any money out of it. This was about us going bust.
Yeah.
So this was about losing everything. So I felt if everything goes, then it's not my fault. Do you know what I mean? I felt like...
Take that responsibility away from me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd be lying to sit here and say to you that no, I wouldn't have let that happen, because I think at times in March and April in 2020, no, I did want everything to go bust, because I found it all too hard in my mind to deal with. And I just think I wanted to start again, and I was having these crazy thoughts, and this is the one where it's probably not true. I was having thoughts where if it all goes bust, maybe I could just move back to London and just get a job washing dishes in a restaurant and work my way up again and kind of... Completely start from scratch, because I felt like that, you know, I was having so many weird thoughts about what I would do, and I felt like completely starting from scratch would be something really great for me to do, and something that like a massive challenge again to start again.
Not one to shy away from a challenge.
No, not one to shy away from a challenge, and also not one to shy away from hard work and that kind of thing. But the difficulty is once you've been your own boss, it's easy for me to say that I'd go and start again somewhere and have a boss and have somebody telling me what to do.
Yeah.
But if you've been your boss for 11 years now, I'm not sure that it would be that easy. I know people do, and I'm sure it would be fine, but yeah. The reality is probably very different.
I think so. How was your sleeping at this time? I mean, you're talking about these certain thoughts that, you know, may or may not have been true about wanting to start again and taking the responsibility away. Were you managing to look after yourself within that? Because obviously you were thinking of you just constantly juggling the businesses.
Oh, that's a good question. And easy for me to say that I had real trouble sleeping, and you know that I'd never do. There's only been a few times where, yeah, no, sleeping's fine. Sleeping's always been fine. And looking after myself, that was fine as well. What else are you going to do at home other than eat? So I ate a lot. I actually put weight on. That aspect of it and looking after myself, actually, I started training at home and stuff like that. So that was actually quite a good bit of motivation for me, because whatever's happened in my life, whenever I've been feeling a bit shitty personally, the one thing that's made me feel better about myself has been training. So
yeah, and it's nice to switch the focus onto something else, especially when your mind is just spinning.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what else happened as well was we started... And actually, I think that Claire probably thinks this as well, the MD of the business. One of the best things that happened was we got asked to do another show on telly, a very casual show on like a lifestyle cooking show on Channel 4. Mm. That gave me focus. I fucking hated it. I hated every minute of it. And I never want to do it again. But it gave me focus.
Yeah.
I'm not natural like you are with that side. That's, you know, that's your career, and that's what, you know, you're fucking amazing at it. I'm not. I'm terrible at it. When you say about losing sleep, actually probably doing any kind of filming probably makes
me... Yeah, you don't like that. That,
I hate that, it. Hate it, hate
that
it, hate it, hate
raises
it,
your
it.
Anxiety levels.
I hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it. And I'd be very, very self-destructive about never doing telly again. And I'd probably say certain things to ensure that I never do telly again, because I fucking hate it. But honestly, the focus that that gave me, and I think the people around me, the close people around me would say that the focus that filming that show gave me in the pandemic, because it was in the pandemic... that was excellent for me. It was really excellent. And that made me train more as well, because I was very conscious about the way that I looked and I wanted to make sure I looked my best. And,
yeah,
you know, I try and pump up my biceps a little bit. So it was making me train more. It was making me look after my physical appearance. It made me very
you were working with my friend Anna, who said you were absolutely lovely.
Oh, God. So, Anna was amazing.
Yeah,
Anna
she's
was,
brilliant. Yeah,
Anna was amazing, but the personal part of the show, the personally filming stuff, I fucking hate it, Craig. I absolutely hate it. I fucking dread it. I hated every second of filming. Hate it, hate it, hate it. I hate it. God, I hate it so much. It gives me anxiety. It gives me anxiety. I hate it. I can't say it. I can't say it. And I don't know why I hate it so much. I think perhaps it's the confidence thing again. I dread it. I fucking dread it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because is it that it's a camera in front of you? Because, you know, I can sit down with you even when we don't have microphones in front of us. When we do, there's still the conversations flowing, and you don't shy away from certain topics at all.
No.
You go in there, but is it just because you're being you on camera?
Not sure.
Because let's face it, it's not natural. It's not a natural thing.
No,
to do.
Fucking hell, it's not natural. No, it's act. Oh, sorry, it's act. It's act. However you look at it,
you put it on as a bit of an act.
Oh, it's an act.
Yeah.
It's an act, and it's an act, and I'm, you know. Craig, I don't fucking care where people keep their spices in their kitchen. I don't give a fuck. I don't care about stuff like that. So saying those kind of things and, you know, yes, I really love great food. And I actually like talking to people that are unsure about cooking.
Mm.
I like giving them advice. But there's so much of all of that that I really don't fucking care about.
Yeah.
And the things that when I'm saying things about, I've got a tip. If you hang a bit of string from a tap and it's got a leak, it drips down the string. Fucking old Craig. I fucking wouldn't say that to anyone. So saying shit like that that's the bit where I hate myself for it when I say stuff like that, because I don't want to say stuff like that because I don't mean it. If there was TV where it was, where you were genuinely just being yourself and you were just speaking to people normally like me and you are right now.
Yeah.
I'm into it. I'm 100% into it, but TV's never like that, Craig.
No, exactly. Well, there we go. There's the show, isn't it?
There never would be a show like that.
Why not?
Because they don't make TV like that.
No, exactly, they don't make TV like that. But why not? You always see, you know, when you look at an incredible drama and you go, on paper, this shouldn't work. This looks boring. If I'm flicking through the pages, then you see it on telly and you go, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
This shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah.
So therefore, what would you change in the way that... Because there's like a tidal wave of cookery shows, especially now because we're coming into Christmas.
I'm embarrassed that I'm part of one because there's too many. It didn't need to be one. There didn't need to be one. That show didn't... I shouldn't have fucking done it, Craig. I shouldn't have done it. But I was... I sound like I'm taking things for granted,
no,
Craig.
You don't.
I know a million people would want to do that, especially chefs. I know they would. I sound like I'm taking things for granted, and I promise you, that's not where this is coming from. I didn't want to. If it wasn't, I'm doing things. I'm doing it because I want the businesses to fucking be busy.
Yeah, I mean, you've admitted as well that it gave you focus, even though you didn't like it and you were possibly terrified of doing it.
Yeah, I'm not. You must be able to explain it much better than I can. I'm just.
I'm still always quite terrified. See, one thing that I used to hate, and I'm sure I've said this over the years on this. I was terrified starting to do this all those years ago.
The podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Because I was always so nervous about promotion of shows, which is, so I'm doing interviews or I'm doing live television, because it was the one time that you have to sit there and be you. You have to be a version of you as close as possible.
Okay,
that's when... the job really ends. You may have had a series in the can for 6 months or whatever it is, but the job only really ends just before it airs, because that's when you're finishing off the promotion.
Yeah.
The other week I was finishing off Doctor Who stuff and I was going, whatever you do, don't ask me about the plot. I'll probably get killed by BBC now. I said, it's been so long and it's so complicated, I can't even tell you. And then I was doing a research chat and she rung up and she went, so...
Tell me about it.
I said, don't ask me about that. I really can't tell you. If you ask me that on live TV, I'm going to end up with egg on my face. It's going to be terrible. So I think it's taken me however many years we've been doing it. 5 years, Griff? Yeah. 5 years.
Wow.
I still have to ask him for what the email address is because I always forget. But yeah, it's taken me that long to I suppose, be slightly more comfortable in my own skin. So I'm not, when I'm not playing a character.
Yeah.
But I think it's just time, maybe.
I
don't know. I think it's horses for courses, though. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Some people, I remember once, my friends were incredible costume designers and they were doing a period film and they were filming in Blackpool. I said, oh, we're in Blackpool. I said, I'm not there. They said, and they'd met my mum and dad. They said, oh, did your mum and dad want to come and be extras and we'll get all dressed up? It'd be really fun. And my mum went, oh, no, absolutely not. I couldn't think of anything worse. Yeah. That would terrify me. She'd be super self-conscious. Yeah. You couldn't even... No, absolutely not. Think about it. Worst idea in the world.
Yeah.
So for some people, it's just not even about time. It's like just...
I'd say for me, it wouldn't be about time. I don't know because obviously I haven't got any experience to be able to judge that. Mm. I would guess, though, if I'd done it for like 5 years or something like that, I just couldn't imagine feeling any better about it. I fucking hate it. I just dread it so much.
What about, right, I'm just throwing it out there, if they said, all right, you're not happy with this script or this format of this show what we want. What would you do? How do you want to do it? If we go, all right, there's the keys to the castle, you make your show, how would you do it? And I know how honest you are, but you've got to remember this is television and we can't upset too many people.
Yeah, I know, and that's the thing. I just anything that was really fucking real. When we did the one documentary that we did about the opening of a restaurant Pinion that we've got in Prescott, that felt really good because most of the time I was just being myself.
Yeah, so you were.
It was somebody, well, not somebody, it was Dan following me around and just asking me questions like he would, like me and you are now. And so I was just being myself.
And also it was about how you were feeling at certain times, whether you're going to hit targets. Exactly. And you were being you.
And in the restaurants as well, when he was filming in the restaurants, I was just being myself. I was doing what I would do anyway.
Yeah.
Nothing was acted for that. So if there was something where it was just being yourself, I guess being yourself. Like I really like talking to people.
Yeah.
Not loads of people, no. A couple of people maybe at the same time. Really like talking to people and finding out about people. I think like you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, which is exactly what you do.
I'm fascinated with people. Yeah.
And finding out about people. I do, it sounds really cheesy, but I like community. I do like community. And cooking, if there was somewhere, I would enjoy teaching people how to cook. But not fancy food, you know, a lot of generation. It feels like people have missed a generation. There's people don't know how to cook like that. It's coming back, but there's a lot of people that don't know how to cook now.
Yeah,
it feels like it hasn't been passed down from parents as much as it used to be. So really simple things like a lot of people struggle with things like a Sunday roast or a Yorkshire pudding or something a bit more fancy like making a risotto or something like that. I would love to be able to show people stuff like that. That I'd buzz off that. Because it would be me doing the things that I would normally do anyway, because that's the type of food I like anyway. Just showing someone who didn't understand how to do it, I think I'd be good at something like that.
But there's nothing.
They try. Everything's so fake added on top of it. Everything has to be so. Any ideas? God, I sound like a fucking dick, Craig.
No, you don't.
Any ideas that I'm told about potential TV shows that could happen for us?
Yeah.
They always have to have these extra bits added on for what's it called? To dramatize and to make. If you're looking through a magazine online about what's going to be on telly at night.
Now, I don't know. It's Christmas, Gary. So the Radio Times Radio and Highlight is coming out very soon, mate.
Everyone has to get that.
Absolutely.
But if you're looking at that, there has to be something that grabs your eye. Now it has to be something crazy. A crazy title of something and a crazy idea But that's where things get lost, if you ask me, because that's where shows are just, they're just faff. What I do, why does everyone not want to watch stuff that's really fucking genuine?
And also,
it's actually about people. They're the best shows.
Strip it back.
Yeah.
When you know, everything was on repeat very early on telly and they were striving for content, there was a lovely show, it's totally not about food, and it was all about walking. Did you ever watch it? So it was on BBC Two, so they had
it was a
different person every week, and there was one with like Selena Scott, Selena Scott on telly for years, one with Reverend Richard Coles, and they were just having like a GoPro on, and they were just going this lovely walk, and they would just talk to the camera, and it was as genuine and stripped back. And as what? Yes, of course, Lem did one as well, and it was so honest and freeing. And even though when it was a time when one thing that everybody could do is get out, wherever you are, whether you're in the city or in the countryside, is to go for a walk. And sometimes they'd just bump into people having a walk or walking the dog, and they'd have a little exchange. And it was the most lovely, freeing 25 minutes or so ever.
I'm going to hunt it down. Yeah, I'm going to have a look.
So lovely and stripped back. So maybe there's your key, is to something, because everything is a bit flashy.
Yeah.
Big lights, big spectacle, big theatrical, or it's a bit raw, but it's still, it's fake.
Yeah.
So to do something stripped back with honesty, and the things you're talking about there, risottos, getting a Sunday roast right, timing, they're all good, solid foundations to start, and then you can build from there.
I think one of the things as well is, like you just said before, there's so many cooking shows, and there's so many... There's so many chef-led things.
You can't move for them now, especially at Christmas time, can you?
It's shit. So, I have to think, do you really want to be part of just another cooking show and another chef-led thing? And I'm not exactly, I'm such a typical chef as well,
In what respect would you say you're a typical chef?
I'm just a normal chef covered in tattoos, like every stereotypical chef in the UK. If they're going to be making shows, maybe they should be making them with much more interesting people. They're all just, most of the cooking shows are the same, is what I think I'm trying to get at. So what's the fucking point in joining in with that? But that can make something much more interesting.
But that's why if you break the mold and make something more interesting, taking you out of the equation, then it sounds like we're trying to pitch a TV show where we're not just having a conversation. I love
Craig.
If
anything, I would like to say I don't want to do any more TV.
I think we know. who would you like to see on telly, giving advice and giving tips and helping people who can't cook or build foundations in cooking?
God, that's a really good question as well. There's so many people, Craig.
Because it seems that lots of people who we both know and respect and sometimes don't respect are on telly.
Yes. Look, the things that I said that you, the question that I was answering when you said to me, what would I feel comfortable doing?
Yeah.
I answered that with the things that I would feel comfortable doing if I was to do something would be things like making a Sunday roast or Yorkshire puddings and stuff like that. That has been fucking done. That's been on TV a million times. Doesn't need to be on TV.
But we remember Delia's book and Nigella Lawson's book was absolute revelation because they were going back from scratch. Yeah. One of the recipes was about how to boil an egg, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's amazing. And both those people are amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. And both of those guys' recipes are solid recipes. They're brilliant. that has been all that has been on TV so many times. It's all been seen. It's all been done. And you can find it all. But actually, the more that British people get interested in food, the more actually we're interested in different cuisines.
Yeah.
So what would be better on TV is not seeing British food be cooked. Because it's been done and done and done and done and done. So if anything, it would be better to see people from different backgrounds.
The people we don't see on telly, the cuisines that we don't see
every day. Yeah.
If I think about...
Well, that's inspiring.
It's inspiring because people look at, you know, people like, it's, if I take Sabrina Gaynor, for example, whenever I see her on Saturday Kitchen, I look at her food and I'm just like, fuck, you know, it looks so fucking tasty.
Yeah.
It looks so tasty.
Yeah.
And so I think if we're to take chefs, it should be people that have got something a little bit different to offer them from the stuff that I said I'd be comfortable cooking, for sure.
And stuff, the fact that these chefs we don't see on telly all the time, and maybe they've got something to say.
Definitely.
Instead of churning out the old script.
Definitely. Look, I mean, you mentioned Nigella and you mentioned Delia, and they're amazing. And when we do talk about people that are, that we've seen so often on TV for so long, I do actually look back at some shows. Like if I watch anything by Rick Stein, fuck, that guy is so watchable. Like all of his old shows, I watch his shows and I just think he's amazing. So the older shows, I think they're amazing. But I think if we're going to reproduce cooking shows now, if we're going to do new things, it should be with different cultures and different people telling us different things.
Yeah.
Because we've fucking seen it all before.
True. But I do like seeing the old vintage Keith Floyd's clips.
Oh, they're amazing. Amazing.
Talk about honesty.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit would never fly on telly now, would it?
Oh, they're amazing. There's one... did you ever see... You probably have, Craig. I know you're really into all of this. Did you ever see one that Marco Pierre White did called Cooking with Marco?
No.
I bet you have seen it. Have a look on YouTube.
It's, right.
It's probably from like... I think it's probably like late 80s, maybe early 90s. And it's just him... It's just him being himself.
Was it when he was
fucking nasty, but you don't see any of that.
Yeah.
You see a very, very, very stern person. But what you actually see is somebody that's so engrossed in cooking that it's hard not to be completely inspired. And you watch the show and you watch him and the way he is with food. You come away from it wanting to cook and wanting to go to restaurants. It's amazing. And it's also, I love watching it because it's so dated. It's like...
I don't mind that, though. No, I love the dated
same,
stuff.
Yeah, same. I think it's like, is it ITN? Not ITN. Is it ITN? Was it making shows?
Yeah, probably, ITN,
Or ITV or Granot. It was an old production that's obviously not around anymore. But it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, Cooking with Marco. Really interesting.
Let's try and find that on the YouTube link, Griff. Yeah. Put Cooking with Marco, I'm on it.
It's amazing. Amazing.
So how are things looking? Everything is on quite the even keel at the moment, and there's a lot of positivity with regards to you. I'm looking at your staff now, testing, prepping. But we're going into Christmas, and there's worry. But I suppose you can't really project anything at the moment.
Do you mean I can't project personally so the business don't see? Is that what you mean, Craig?
Yeah. I mean the potential that every
Well, it's funny you say that because I found out that in the pandemic when I did project openly and publicly on social media my fears for the business, I found out by the head chef of Wreckfish, Tanner. He interviewed me for a college course a couple of weeks ago, and he told me in this interview that that when I did project how I was feeling and about the worries of the business in the last pandemic, he told me that a lot of the team made them feel pretty shit, made them feel pretty unsafe, because obviously the business that they're working in, the fucking owner of it's online saying that everything's shit. So it's really interesting that you've just asked me that. I find it... I guess I'm probably pretty egotistical and narcissistic because I really like to vent on social media. Mm. I don't know whether it's something cathartic that gets stuff off my chest or whether it's something that, you know, I want people to see what I say. I want my opinions to be heard, but it's something that I've done religiously for the last 10 years. So when you say about, can I project what's happening at the minute? I do try a little bit not to get too negative about the reality of what's going on within the government and the economy, but there's only so much flowery covering up that you can do because I can't hide what's in the news.
No.
You know, last night, you know, it's all over social media last night that there's potential lockdowns coming. So, yes, I can not not project that from my personal social media account. And I can be careful about the things that I say, but it's all over the fucking news anyway. So everybody that works within the business that turns the telly on or the radio on or looks on social media is going to see it.
Yeah.
So you are right, though. I should, you know, it's something I should be really aware of. And Tanner's exactly right for telling me it is something that I should be completely considerate of, compassionate for the people in the business that will see things and then start to worry about their own lives. And it's also hard to get away from it.
In any business, stuff like that bleeds down from the top.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. If I'm walking around, 100%, Craig, I'm walking around being this negative person and doomsday about, you know, what might happen, and it might actually not happen, then yeah, you're exactly right. The managers are going to feel that. The head chefs are going to feel that. And yeah, it will filter down. So I need to be careful about it. And I thought I was being good, but over the last couple of weeks, I found it quite hard again. I even sent a post out that said, and I've been so fucking hypocritical since, I sent out a post that said, polite request to everyone in the hospitality industry, perhaps don't go online talking about cancellations and the negative side of, you know, the Prime Minister coming on TV and saying that new restrictions are in place. Perhaps don't do that. And let's try and be positive. And fucking 2 days later, I'm telling everyone, rah, rah, we've had 70 cancelling Wreckfish and 20 cancelling Collar. And I'm the biggest hypocrite online and I'm the biggest hypocrite operator because I'm doing exactly what I'm advising other people not to. So
yeah,
I find it difficult, but I am also very needy. So the stuff that I say online, I guess I'm doing it for... To get to get attention
and to get a reaction
yeah.
I was talking to a journalist on the phone a couple of days ago, and I've been asked this question because it seems like for ages. He said, when you first got back in front of the camera and you're back on set when my industry was just starting, the cogs were just starting to turn again, he said, how did that feel when it was all snatched away and you couldn't do your job? And I explained what it was like, and that feeling, it was almost childlike. Like, we were, oh my God, I can't believe this is so exciting. It was like first day of school, super, super exciting. When you managed to open the doors again at these restaurants.
Yes, I know what's coming, Craig. I've cried so much.
You don't know what's coming.
Go on. Sorry, go on.
No, I wanted to ask about the customers coming through.
Ah.
Did you find an excitement or a different attitude from your guests?
God.
What did you think I was going to say just out of interest?
So I thought you were going to ask me, it's my narcissism again. I thought you were going to ask me how I felt.
I thought you were going to say,
because when we reopened, when we first reopened after the major lockdowns,
yeah,
we actually met, all the managers and head chefs met here in Cala. And there was a huge feeling, and I can speak for the teams as well because they told me. Mm. So there was a feeling of like exactly what you just said, like fucking hell, it's like being a kid again. We can do what we want to do, yeah, we can come to work, we can enjoy ourselves again. And that sounds crazy about work because, you know, work shouldn't be enjoyable, but for some people it is, and it's normality.
I think it absolutely should.
Yeah. Yeah, well, normality is something that people need, a lot of people. But we came in here and I stood in front of there's probably about 50 people in here in the ops team. And I just wanted to say first, before we went through some menu training and things like that, you know, I'm so pleased that we're all here today and that we can kind of see a light and the restaurants are reopening. I just fucking started crying.
Oh, I started crying.
I felt like such a fucking wally, Craig. I felt like such a wally. And Nat, the manager of Sticky, my girlfriend, was here as well. And I felt really embarrassed that I was fucking crying in front of her. But I was crying in front of everyone in the fucking restaurant. But the feeling, it was overwhelming. Of things could get back to normal.
Yeah.
And that feeling was like, it was amazing. And but to answer your question about how it felt when we reopened with the guests, it was the same feeling. When people first came back, fucking hell, you should have seen the spend per head, Craig, because everyone was buying champagne. Honestly, everyone was buying champagne because everyone was like, yes, we're actually out. In a restaurant. So all the guests, when we first reopened, were amazing. And it was, although it was busy and it was hard for all the teams because they hadn't been used to being on their feet for so long. So their feet were hurting, their backs were hurting. They were absolutely knackered and we were busier than we normally would be. There was still a really nice feeling. Those feelings have changed every now and again. And there's been parts that haven't been great. And if I'm really honest with you, the things like the eat out to help out, from a business point of view, they were fantastic because the revenue was excellent.
Yeah.
But from a team point of view, they were fucking awful.
Why, Gary?
A lot of the people that came on eat out to help out weren't lovely. And they weren't our loyal regular guests.
Okay.
They were people that don't often regularly go out.
Yeah.
So to be honest, Craig, there was a lot of fucking arseholes that came to the restaurants and they were fucking rude and they weren't understanding of the fact that we were still in a pandemic and a lot of us were still fucking scared. Because, you know, people that are working in restaurants, you know, front of house and chef de parties in the kitchen, you know, I'm sure a lot of them would love to have not have come to work while the pandemic was on, but they have to feed themselves and their families and whatever, and didn't have the luxury or privilege of not going to work in the pandemic. So there was a lot of guests in the eat out to help out that really didn't fucking appreciate that. And they were fucking rude and didn't appreciate that. A lot of the guys were fucking scared. They had all their masks on and they didn't want to be too close to people. And eat out to help out just fucking crammed lots of people into restaurants and crammed very rude people into restaurants. So
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. The guest attitude, like when you've had something taken away and you know, I'm sick of cooking for myself or I'm sick of your food. There's those simple pleasures that we took for granted.
Yeah.
And you don't expect people, I don't expect people to be rude full stop in restaurants. And I hate, you know, if I hear anybody sort of click or anything, you're out. It was horrible. Yeah. So to hear that makes me quite sad. But sadly, I'm not surprised.
Unfortunately, it's a part of restaurants. it doesn't mean it's ever acceptable and we don't tolerate it. We don't in any of the restaurants.
No,
and,
we certainly don't.
I mean, some restaurants do tolerate it and some managers and some owners do accept it as they do let it go and they are more interested in, you know, the sales at the end of the day. I'd like to think that we're the opposite of that and we'd rather not have those guests in and we tell them to piss off if they do act in any way like that.
But also it's not only disrespectful and awful to staff of any restaurant, it's uncomfortable. If I'm sat near a group who are obnoxious or rude and I'm just trying to have a nice meal or celebrate, it's completely fucking ruined my night as well. And that all the other people that are around them.
Unfortunately, it happens.
And sadly, that is your lasting image. How was your night you were looking forward to?
Yeah.
That you've saved up for?
Yeah.
Ruined. And do you know what? I probably wouldn't even go back there now.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking of that.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's really down, isn't it?
It's
true though, isn't it?
It's true. Listen, we don't just get complaints from people that are unhappy with some kind of service aspect or experience that they've had. We get complaints from people like what you've just said, that have been sat next to somebody that is creating a shit time for everyone else because they're being a dick. It is part of it. I was saying something funny on social media the other day because somebody went into one of the restaurants and a few bottles of wine had been drunk. Mm. And don't worry, we're not going dark on this one. I find this one pretty funny.
Okay, good.
A few bottles of wine had been drunk. And actually, we've got the night on CCTV in the restaurants. We've been able to look at the table. And actually, it was very light that night. If anything, if I'd have seen that night and walked in on that night, I'd have said to whoever the manager was on, I would have said, is there any chance we can just dim the lights a bit? Because it's very bright in here tonight. So we could definitely see everything. And a lady got in touch after her evening in that restaurant. And she has complained and threatened us as a business and me with not only going to see her solicitor, but with making it public that while she was in the restaurant, she drank one of the candles instead of her instead of her glass of wine and holds us fully responsible and wants to know, why we let it happen and what we're going to do about it and essentially what compensation she's going to get.
Oh, my God.
Craig, this is normal. This is normal.
That's far from normal,
it's normal,
Gary.
This kind of stuff is normal. This happens. This kind of stuff is part of restaurants. That's one of the lighthearted ones. I mean,
I'm sure she's not thinking it's lighthearted, to be honest, but she's going
for
it.
Yeah, I think we've dealt with it pretty well, to be honest, because right. We've explained the situation in total reality of what's happened. And, we've explained how the night's gone and exactly what's happened and shown, so we've dealt with it pretty well.
Yeah.
But these types of things, and to me, Craig, that's one of the funnier things that are part of complaints, but some of them aren't as funny.
No, certainly not.
Some of them are harassment and some of them are abuse, but there's no point going down that actually, Craig, because 99% of the people that come into our restaurants are fucking amazing. Mm. And you can see that by just the loyalty that we have with things like crowdfunding. We've got such a loyal following that... it's overwhelming how much it helps us as a business.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I must admit, I had Sunday lunch over at that table over there a couple of months ago, and it was very nice. And the people around were very grateful to be back.
Yeah, for sure.
Having a Sunday roast somewhere—it's
definitely.
Talking about crowdfunding, Gary. What is there anything in the pipeline? Anything next? What's going to be happening?
So
I may have heard a rumor.
So I have viewed a pub.
I fucking knew it.
So I've before I go off on a tangent about what could potentially be exciting plans for the future, let me just say that the forefront of what we have to do now is look after the businesses that we've already got.
Sure.
And I don't want it to sound like I take that kind of thing for granted that, because there could be opportunities for us to expand, we don't just move on without consideration for what we're already doing, making sure what we already do is good enough. So our priority is the restaurants that we already have and the events business that is opening now, and we're going to be doing lots of weddings next year. So that's the priority.
But having said that, Craig.
Having said that, yeah. Disclaimer. Yeah. Having said that, I've viewed a pub a few times now. I had a viewing for it again this week, but the viewing was cancelled because they couldn't get the keys for a part of it that I've requested on the last three times. So I'm sorry, that was last week. So I'm viewing it again this week. And it's an amazing old pub. It's empty at the moment. The building's fucking gorgeous. Got enough car parking spaces. It's got a beautiful bar. It's got everything, Craig.
I'll be there when you open the doors, Gary Usher. Always, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks so much for coming on and have a lovely Christmas, my friend.
Thank you, Craig.
Another episode is done. That was season 9, episode 8 of the Two Shot Podcast. I've got to start learning how to do that. I'm quite enjoying it actually already. It feels kind of nice. The fact that since 2017 we've been rolling out all these episodes, but I think it's nice to put them into seasons. That was season 9, episode 8. What did I tell you? Gary Usher back. Firing on all cylinders is such a joy to sit down and talk to. I really hope you enjoyed it. And I'm so pleased you're back. So what can I tell you about episode 9 next week? Well, I can tell you that we are carrying on a culinary theme. And I go to the house of a man, a chef, who... instead of renting out a large restaurant on a high street or in a little hamlet, he cooks for people in his kitchen, in his house, for a very small number of people. His name is Eddie Shepherd. You're going to get to know him next week. It's a brilliant lesson. So, until next week, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff. And welcome back. This is the Two Shot Podcast. Take care. I'll see you next week. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.